Cable Radio Network, the radio channel.
It's a conspiracy. They operate secretly. Control what you hear and see. It's a conspiracy. Of the Kennedys have that enemy there, but why the nose is true. But that smoking gun ain't the only one firing. When the bullets flew, plain to see, they're lying to you and me. It's a conspiracy. They operate secretly. Control what you hear and see. It's a conspiracy. When a soldier dies, do the people cry everybody wonder how? When a soldier lies, all the people buy and send them to the Senate now. Train the sheep, the lion to you and me. It's a conspiracy. They are it secretly. Control what you hear and see. It's a conspiracy. Everybody that knows that are UFO snatching little kids at night. But the government been denying it. They tell us everything alright. Train the sea, the lion to you and me.
Well, good evening. My name is Don Ecker, the show UFOs Tonight. A little change of pace there, because that's basically what we're going to be talking about tonight. Conspiracies. First, however, I got a couple of announcements to make. Number one, as you all know, this is Halloween weekend. And Vicky is going to be doing a very special landing pad tonight. In about an hour. It's right now about 9:05 on the East Coast. It's a little after midnight on the East Coast. Don't forget, you got to change those clocks back tonight. But the show's still only going to be 2 hours. Tonight, Dwight Schultz is not here. He is appearing as one of the presenters down at the Universal Hilton in Hollywood, presenting some awards at the People's Choice Science Fiction Awards. He sends his regards and his regrets because he really wanted to be out of tonight's show, but he wasn't able to make it. However, from certain contacts I have, I can tell you all now before it's announced who the winners are. Now, for the Male People's Choice Award in the field of science fiction, it is a dual award. They came up with two people that both grabbed the honors. They couldn't decide which one was which, so they made it a dual award. First winner is Bruce Boxleiter, Babylon 5. And, all right, thank you. And also taking honors, David Duchovny. What, no applause? Well, anyway, the female Science Fiction Choice Awards go to Gillian Anderson of The X-Files, along with David Duchovny. Now that is hot off the press. What, no applause? Well, I guess it's because of the way The X-Files has gone to hell in the last couple of months.
Oh, they're still progressing, though. I like them both, you know.
Oh, that's one of our guests sitting here in studio. Tonight, it's going to be a very special show. I have two gentlemen in here by the name of Bill Bridges and Dave Torelli. As a matter of fact, last week on one of the local radio stations here in the Los Angeles area, KIEV, they had a very special show called The Blue File. It ran for 2 hours. As a matter of fact, I sat up from 1 a.m. until 3, guys. They really put you on it at a choice time. 1 to 3, but I sat through it, and it was fascinating.
The
it
price was
truly.
Good, though, yeah, the price was right.
The price was right. That's basically, I guess, the important thing. Guys, we're going to be talking about conspiracies tonight, and I think probably anybody that's had any interest in the UFO field for any length of time has suspected that there are certain conspiracies connected with it, perhaps a conspiracy of silence, perhaps conspiracies involving the information, the database, perhaps even conspiracies involving some of the very prominent people in the field. You know, there's been an old wives' tale and a kind of a cliche that's been going around now in the UFO field for many, many years that you guys both are aware of. Basically, that you haven't made it until you've been accused of being a member of the CIA.
well, then I guess everybody in this room's made it.
Hey, we've all made it.
So that's one of the things about it. Conspiracies, basically what you guys did last week for those people, especially across the country, that didn't hear the show. You talked about certain government contract companies that are involved in doing research for different agencies. You talked about some research involving biological questions, involving an entire mapping of the DNA structure within the human animal, and a number of other things. And I guess the first question I want to ask both Dave and Bill, and you guys jump in anytime.
All right.
What in the hell does that have to do with UFOs? I guess that's first and foremost.
Well, if we had 6 hours, Don. But basically, in a nutshell, Bill, why don't you handle as far as the out?
Well, it's very... Yep. Yeah, what does that have to do with UFO? When we talk about the UFO subject, it will all come kind of slowly and painfully dragged into the realm of reality, trying to track things down, trying to figure out what the hell is going on. We always stand in the kind of gray zone of lots of anecdotes, lots of tantalizing facts, and very little proof behind it. Some extraordinary things happening which defy explanation, and the easiest thing to do is assign it to, the aliens.
I think the big problem that people have with the subject of UFOs in general is that it's generalized. We are not dealing with just one phenomena here. We're dealing with many phenomena. As you know, Ben Rich, before he died, made the statement that he not only believed that UFOs were real, standing for the acronym of unfunded opportunities, but for what it really stood for as well. And Ben Rich, of course, Vice President of Lockheed, Skunk Work Program here in Burbank.
Well, he believed in two types of UFOs.
That's right.
He believed
right.
in
that's
the
right.
actual alien craft and the human.
Right,
UFOs.
That's what
absolutely.
You're trying to
unfunded
say,
opportunities is how he referred to the UFO, the other type.
The local type.
And basically, on a CNN interview that we have on tape, states that it's no longer a question of how far and how fast the Air Force will allow us to go. It's no longer a question of that. The technology exists, was his exact statement. Now, that he made this statement upon retirement of the SR-71 at the big party they held for it at Lockheed. And I think the CNN reporter was somewhat taken back, not expecting...
We have that
answer
on tape.
He got. As a matter of fact, his first answer was, well, what's up next for the Skunk Works? And he said, well, as a matter of fact, we just finished the F-117, which is, I guess you could say, finished after 20 years. but he made the statement that our next project is to take E.T. back home. And the CNN reporter hesitates, and he says, pardon me? And he says, you know, E.T., the little guy, we're going to be taking him back home. And if that picture doesn't paint, tell 1,000 words, I don't know what does.
Well, I went in the Army in 1969, and was in Southeast Asia in 1970. I was in Okinawa. before I deployed to Vietnam, and they were flying SR-71 operations out of Kadena all the time.
Right.
They were flying them around North Vietnam. They were flying them around China.
Mm-hmm.
They were still top secret. I mean, most people back here in the States had no idea about the SR-71, even though Lyndon Johnson made a gaffe, okay, at one point. I don't think most people picked up on it. They probably still thought they were flying U-2s. But that thing was so advanced, and it's a 1950s aircraft. Okay, but it was still, as far as the technology, the speed and what have you, was so advanced, and they used it right up until the late 80s, when they officially retired it. But the problem was, they didn't have a follow-on project, at least mm-hmm. they claimed mm-hmm. they didn't.
Right.
And they even had to pull it out of quote-unquote mothballs for a couple of other problems that cropped up since they retired it. One of them being, of course, Desert Storm, Desert Shield, Desert Storm. Now, do you think that they, in fact, have an operational vehicle right now flying that came out of something like the Skunk Works that, as many people in this field, some of the more fringe elements believe, this follow-on may even have some borrowed technology incorporated into it.
Right.
Are you suggesting that that may be possible?
Oh, I think that's absolutely the case. If you look, several of the people that work for not only Lockheed, but Northrop, Grumman, the list goes on, Lockheed Sanders, the list goes on, have basically come out of the closet, so to speak, and admitted that some of what they've done is out there technology. Curtis LeMay is probably the most famous known as far as the military aspect of it goes, but going back to Lazar, Don, as we pointed out on our show the other night, somebody that's been in the military like yourself or a detective as you were, you've got to start asking questions when a government scientist who literally is, you're talking about days of actual time, hours of actual time employed at such a site, had access to such material as he claims he did, and a 9mm round put into his car as he entered the freeway one day going to North Vegas.
Shot a tire out.
Right. But
you know, that smacked to me, as you know. Now, we haven't gone into anybody's background here,
right,
as far as
right.
what you do in everyday life and
mm-hmm.
so forth, but you have had some connection over the years with military,
yes,
and other type things.
Mm-hmm.
You know yourself that if somebody wanted to whack Lazar would have been whacked.
That's right.
He would have been whacked.
So
like or even if they didn't want to make it a public thing, if he were truly such a national security risk, he could have died of an unexplained fever, an illness. He could have been the victim of a hit-and-run accident. He could have had a safe dropped on him, okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, walking down the street. So the fact that he's still here and around, even though I personally find his story interesting, that tells me that there's something else at work there. And Lazar's been a guest on the show.
Right, once.
He's been on several times.
Oh, has he?
Yeah.
I noticed a couple of times when I tuned in, it was, as usual, Huff standing in. But it seems to be interesting if anybody out there is a real fan of the subject, and they review going all the way back to George Knapp and some of the, of course, not the unpublished interviews that Knapp did with Lazar, but the published, and the three interviews, two official, one by chance, that Lazar ended up doing with Billy Goodman, which I know you're familiar with, Don. The second show itself, I believe it was on Thanksgiving night, Huff called into Billy's show and said, well, we're very disappointed because a certain individual, which we all know and love by the name of Bill Cooper, was supposed to appear and at the last minute did not. And Huff, in his own words, states, well, the reason we're listening tonight is we kind of wanted to see what Cooper would say and then trash him. Now, I can't say that I would disagree with that statement, but Huff slipped. And I think the whole Lazar thing, to any of us that use our heads, can logically be seen as something that was intended. The question why is exactly that. The question is why was it allowed to go on? Bob Lazar, as we speak, is currently still employed by special contract for Los Alamos.
Which is, I mean, just in case anybody out there is missing the obvious, you've got a guy who signs on a security oath, goes to work in a super secret installation. Within a matter of hours, like I said, or days, he's exposed to highly classified material. He supposedly feels that he cannot contain himself, that this has to be brought to the public for various reasons. And he goes public, he makes this announcement. Everybody disowns him. Nobody seems to know who he is. But then he's still getting contracts at Los Angeles, at Los Alamos National Laboratory. Now, if he had, in fact, violated security, you know, I went through a security check when I was in the Army. You all did. You know that there's no way in the world. I mean, it's just like black and white. Boom, sorry.
Well, in his own words, he said that when he tried to board the plane to go to Japan, Dennis Mariani, as he first used the name himself.
Yeah.
Which is a name Al Fricke, you know, the name Lockheed used if they had an X-craft that went down. Nobody says we've got an X-craft that went down in Northern California. They say we have Al Fricke has a dentist appointment. Al Fricke has this. And the teams that were to do the retrieval knew what that meant.
Right.
The government, very honestly, to the citizenry.
Well, that was a Lockheed code.
Right, a Lockheed exclusive.
Gentlemen, I'm going to have to. I hate to do this, but we're a couple of minutes over break time. We've got to take a quick break. But hold that thought, because we're going to come right back to that. And in the meantime, later in the program, as per usual, we will be opening up the phone lines to take your telephone calls. We're not going to be doing it for a bit yet, because we have a lot of ground we want to cover. But grab your pencils, grab your paper. We're going to give you the telephone numbers. And as a matter of fact, we have a special treat in store tonight. Renee played hooky. She ran away tonight. She's in a place full of flashing lights that's in a different state this evening. I think she's probably going to need an orthopedic surgeon for her elbow and shoulder here, because she's going to be making certain motions with her arm there around, you know, what they call one-armed bandits. But Vicky's going to be giving out the numbers, and here they come.
Well, Renee,
they say in radio there's nothing worse than dead silence, so we certainly want to alleviate that. No dead silence.
Is that a Halloween joke? Dead silence.
No, we're going to be doing some Halloween stuff later on tonight. Okay, let's get back to what we were talking about. Dave, the thing about Lazar, there have been many people over the years that have accused him out and out of being a liar. Mm-hmm. There have been people that have accused him of being the biggest fraud in the UFO field since who knows who. There's been people that have accused him of having been a pawn in a ruthless government game. There have been other people that have almost gone to the grave swearing this guy has got to be legitimate. After all, he was aware of when tests of certain exotic aircraft were taking place. He knew the place to go to. He knew the time to be there. And he took some of his buddies along to videotape it.
Mm-hmm.
So that tells me that there had to be something there.
Right.
But it perhaps wasn't what it necessarily was purported to be.
Correct. And I think we have to look, when we look into Lazar himself, I think we have to look at the connections to Lazar and the site. I'm not breaking any news here to say that John Lear, the disinherited son of Bill Lear, was disinherited because of his CIA involvements and because of Bill Lear's rabid dislike for the agency and the way they had treated him in some of their dealings. Now,
not to mention John's little flights of, shall we say, fancy.
That's right. John Lear's also brought us Bill Cooper earlier. God bless him. And we've got him to thank for that, too. Now, John,
and we have John Lear to thank for the evil alien,
yes.
Blood-soaking, blood-drinking creatures that...
Human body parts in vats mixed with hydrogen peroxide with the aliens.
I was there when he first
sponging
came out.
It onto their skin to be absorbed, yeah.
And excreting their waste products
through the skin. Now, at the same time, I just in the overall defense of the field, I called in a few weeks ago prior to us going on the air, called your show, because I was outraged at another group. What I'm getting at here is Bill and I put on a show, the last time we had a show, is there's an old Oriental philosophy of emptying the cup. And I think when somebody comes into this field, especially the public, their cups are already full. And they don't have room for new information, or they don't want to make room. This subject of UFOs goes as deep as your inner consciousness will let it go. It branches out into a vast array of other fields. There's no way to tell you in any one word over any one program how the linkage occurs. It's one that you have to slowly acclimate yourself to.
Well, you know, the analogy about you must first empty the cup before you can accept more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's also, and this is going to sound maybe a little cynical or a little funny, but you know what else they say about fluids? Cream floats to the top, and other things float to the top. Things that we may not necessarily want. Brown things, yeah. Smelly
yep.
things.
Yep.
And in this field, unfortunately, one has had to wade through that before they can partake of the cup.
Right.
Now, probably this field more than, and I hope you all know what I'm referring to, but probably more than any other field, this field has been a fertile ground for the fringe, the nutcases, did you listen by chance last week to the show here, UFOs Tonight on the Art Bell thing?
Yeah, I absolutely did and loved it, yes. Matter of fact, Art Bell's stuck his foot in his mouth since then, Don, which... if you think he did the night that you had him on about the subject you had, you should have heard him a few nights ago going into other areas that like you were just saying with Lear, basically does nothing, accomplishes nothing, but scares the hell out of the public. And Art Bell, not only is it unbelievable to me that he is doing the kind of show he does on a major radio station in Los Angeles, on KABC now, replacing Ray Breen, but the more unbelievable thing is that he's been in the business so long. He has no background in this field. He literally puts things out on the air. For instance, the other night, he said, and you have to look, but most people don't pay attention to every word people say. Just got a fax in, and talks about the fact that California is about to fall off into the ocean, and he totally backs up, what's his name, the guy that is the dead Indian that comes back from his hospital Earth Changes report. Backs
Gord
that up.
Michael Scallion?
Gord Michael Scallion. And as friends and I have followed Scallion, we ourselves have realized his success rate on these predictions is rapidly gone downhill since he once came close and hit one almost on the head.
No, wait a minute. Now, I mean, we've got some truly great prophets in this field. Sean David Morton was a case in point.
Well, I wouldn't agree with that.
I mean, Sean was one of those people that also, I mean, he's backing up Scallion. That LA is going to be.
He's stealing from Scallion.
Oh,
is what
okay.
He's doing. Yeah. If you notice, I mean, I've had access to Sean, and I will use just that word access. I won't say he's a friend because he's not.
But this is my point that I'm making. That what is it about this field, in your opinion, in the two of you, that draw such elements into this field? Is it because there is no college or university with a quote-unquote UFO degree that anybody can hang up a shingle basically on their
right.
on their roof?
I think that's a big part of the problem is the fact that, and you know, many people in this field, responsible people in this field, have lamented this condition, and I think collectively, slowly, we're working towards trying to get this area looked at in a more organized and scientific way, because right now it's in such an infancy, and it is such a blurry picture that you can bring any subject into the UFO arena, and suddenly it's there. You know, it doesn't need substantiation. It just needs to have some kind of color to it, and it becomes part of the lore. I mean,
That's right.
The field is full of all kinds of lore. Ah, we're being served coffee. This is wonderful. You know, so I think it's a lot of that to do with the fact that, yeah, anybody can just call themselves a UFO investigator, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know, and hang out there. I mean, it seems to me every time I look at Sean David Martin, he's got another degree from somewhere. You know, God, I wish I could go to school that fast.
Yeah, his degrees are postpaid ahead of time. They come in the mail.
Well, last night I was up until about 3, I guess close to 3 o'clock in the morning. Actually, it would have been this morning, listening to Bell's program, because Hoagland...
he was on last night. Huh?
Was on. Richard Hoagland. He's been a guest on this program a number of times. And according to the PR earlier this week, Hoagland was going to have some absolutely astonishing revelations about Roswell and some new information on the Roswell film.
Mm-hmm. You don't look astonished.
Well, it was never mentioned last night. Somehow it got lost in the wayside. But in the meantime, I did find out why the presidents of Serbia, Croatia, and Bosnia were going to be taken to Wright-Patterson for their summit on Halloween.
Halloween night, yeah.
Yes.
Well, for the non-lethal weaponry display? Or?
Well, according to Hoagland, basically, we're having a hard time getting these guys squared away. So the powers that be are going to show them why they have to get along. They're going to drag out the bodies and the pieces and the parts. Stuff that Barry Goldwater couldn't get in to see. Barry Goldwater, who was a major general in the Air Force Reserve, one of the most powerful senators in the history of the Senate, the fellow that headed up the Armed Services Senate Committee, and he couldn't get in to see it, and he was personal buddies with Curtis LeMay, but
yeah,
but these guys.
I don't know. I mean, I heard they were taken there to get display of new non-lethal weaponry. Of course, that could be a cover for what they're going to. But I don't know what the plan is. Is the idea that whoever said this idea they've been taken to be shown the wreckage or the body parts of the aliens? Is that to say, see,
we better get our stuff together here. But my point was not to pick on Hoagland or Bell. My point was nobody has been willing to demand from any of these people that are making these pronouncements in a national forum, hey guys, what in the hell's your proof? Where's this information coming from?
Exactly.
You're making this statement, but can you back this statement up? Are you another Cooper or Gordon Michael Scallion that's out here making grand pronouncements, scaring the pants off of everybody? And lo and behold, when the time happens, nothing happens. I can remember in 88 and 89 John Lear was really at the top of the lecture circuit profession. And he said, hey, my information is in 2 years we're going to know. And then it was in 5 years we're going to know. Well, guess what? 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, and 5 years passed, and nobody knows. We know less now than we did then.
I would slightly diverge from. I agree with that, Don. Everything you said, other than.
Oh, I think, you know what? You're going to have to agree or disagree with me in a minute because we're at the bottom of the. Hey, I'll tell you, we get rolling here, and I lose track of time. And I know that they want us to make sure that we get some station ID in here. So stand by. My name is Don Ecker. The show is UFOs Tonight. Tonight we are discussing UFOs and conspiracies. It's going to be fascinating. You don't want to tune it out. And for all you people on Salmons that are just joining us at the half hour, remember, when Salmons cuts you off so they can play Armenian folk music in a half an hour, go to your SAP channel, and we'll be back in just a minute. Hey, we're back with some spooky music. I like that.
That's
well,
good
I'll tell
music.
You, Jeff, our producer Jeff, can really pick out some of the best music in the world. And he just sits in there grinning. Every once in a while, he'll slip a little surprise on me just to see what. Last week, I was here munching on something during a break. They came back, went right to me, and I had a mouthful of something. And he was cracking up in here when I was trying to talk and not sound like I was swallowing, too. Well, let's get back to what we were discussing here.
Okay. Let's get to some hardcore fact here since we're dealing with time. In regards to the Lazar thing, I'm going to pass this around the table. It was rumor that the entire Lazar thing took place to out one photograph. The photograph appeared, interestingly enough, when testers models put out their Area S4 UFO. Now, I think I would not be the only one to state, and if anybody disagrees or can prove otherwise, please call and let us know.
Are you talking about the satellite photo?
Right. Well, there's two photos. Bob Lazar, when he came out and did his thing, if anybody goes back to the old recordings of Billy Goodman, it's very interesting when he gets to certain parts of questions that come up, and all of a sudden you'll notice dead silence. And
well, you know what I can recall? Somebody called him up in one of those early shows, and I think it was November of 89.
Right.
And
November 11th.
He was talking about this allegedly cosmic top secret alien spacecraft that was recovered, he was working up, a part of working on. He was talking about all this amazing technology, this outlandish story, and somebody called up and said, well, what can you tell us, and I'm paraphrasing, what can you tell us about Russian MiGs out there? Well, I can't talk about that.
Right.
I mean, my God, if he can talk about alien spacecraft, he could talk about a Russian MiG.
Yeah, there's another clue.
Well, it was a clue to me.
Yeah, there's a big difference between Red Eagle, Red Flag, and Red Hat operations out there. Interestingly enough, not to digress, but just to bring this in, the statues on Easter Island, which everybody, I think, in a lot of scientists, lots of archaeologists have tried to solve before. There's one thing about those statues that they have really can't figure out, and it's the red hats that some of them wear.
Right.
And the reason why some have been toppled off. It's interesting that the name Red Hat comes up out there, because it does have nothing to do with Red Eagle or Red Flag operations. Not at 50.
Well, Red Flag is a war game simulation that the Air Force has been conducting for, well, probably since the Air Force has been around. But, this was new to me, Red Hat.
Well, let me just ask you a question, though. I don't know anything about Red Hat, period. But what the link I just made when you mentioned the statues in Easter Island and the Red Hats and the Operation Red Hat, one of the questions that always came up with Easter Island, just like with the pyramids, was how do you move these huge blocks into place? How did these natives on this island
The Japanese came here and on a laughable PBS, you know, trying to be serious, on Nova, if I'm not mistaken, or Frontline, they showed a Japanese team coming here and showing you with sand, levers, and process of good old manpower and pull, how they got this stone delivered to the site, quarried it, as Sitchin says. You know, the Earth Chronicles are very clear about this. Zachariah Sitchin, if anybody wants
and
to know.
Don't remember, the ecology there was a lot different thousand years ago.
Correct.
They had trees, they had a lot of things, they had different species of animals that after the humans moved in there, they ultimately ended up doing what present-day society is accused of, destroying the resources.
Right. They ran out of they chased themselves off the island by using them up.
And the one thing that John Romer, as a probably, as at least in my humble opinion, one of the foremost Egyptologists socio-archaeologist that's been around, he's probably known to most people who watch any PBS, Discovery, A&E. He did the Testament series on the history of the Bible. As he says, the ancient Egyptians are one of the most recorded histories that we have on this planet. And most of everything they wrote, most of the Dead Sea Scrolls for that matter, are not available to the public, have not been deciphered, will not be allowed to be deciphered. And in the Valley of the Kings, like he says, you couldn't even stop these people, the people that buried the people that were the peasanters, from doing graffiti on the hillsides. The hieroglyphics are even out there. One of the most amazing facts to me, when I came of knowledge of Hoagland and the face on Mars. This is going back a couple of years into your show, Don. I'd heard Hoagland speak from the beginning. I've read his works, and there was one thing that was missing. And I had, along with a couple people that I'd worked with at the time, we mailed to Hoagland a copy of this thing that I'm going to show you here. And to me, and I think everybody here, logically, if you've got the photograph you have of the face on Mars, you have a tetrahedral or a five-pointed pyramid,
right,
along with other pyramid complexes, with which the state of coincidence is just too high to believe that all of these things in one area of Sedona are that there's some intelligence not at work here. This, I'm going to give you a copy of it, because I brought it up on your show, and it was the same effect that it had on you, Don, that I know for a fact it would have on public audiences. And I don't know why Hoagland, when I called in and brought it up, he says, oh yes, I know about that. And the question is, why didn't you bring it up? Because I know a lot of people that have seen this since, and it's an article from the New York Times from August 28th, 1924.
Oh, we talked about that.
Right, and that night, and you yourself said to him, well, what's this, Richard? I've never heard that before. And Hoagland says, oh, yes, Don, oh, yes. Well, you know, this, when it says a face appeared, on a radio piece of radio tape from 1924. That to me,
a radio camera,
exactly, on a 6 foot.
Yeah,
piece
I
of
researched
tape.
That.
That's afterwards. Incredible. That's incredible information, and that right away takes not just as some people say, an anomaly of sound and light, out of the spectrum of just the mathematics. That, you know, granted, when I watch the Hoagland tapes, I'm bored stiff. I don't get all that math. But what's impressive to me is who did get the math. Was the Defense Department and their mathematical people. What's the name of the group that Hoagland even quotes? From Defense Mapping,
right.
That came forward.
Well,
and
that's one of his people that he's worked with, Earl Turun.
Right. But the 28 article, I mean, you're talking about before satellites, before this, before that, and this article appears when a face...
Well, you know, I did some research on this, and mm-hmm. I went back to... before the turn of the last century, when Nikola Tesla and Marconi were both experimenting with transmitters.
Right.
Tesla with huge wattages. Marconi was sending Morse code 50, mm-hmm. 60 miles away. And what struck me when I really started to research this, now these were the only two human beings that we know of on the planet that had the capability of sending or receiving wireless communications. And later, after this happened, uh-huh. with the radio camera where they received, and incidentally, for you folks that may not know about this, and we have talked about this in past shows, back in 1924, astronomers, and it was something that would be virtually impossible today, convinced radio stations, radio transmitters, even ham radio operators all over the world to go silent for a certain length of time, deliberately listening for intelligent signals from outer space. And at that particular point in time, I believe Mars was in close opposition, when in fact they did receive some signals which turned out to be humanoid faces that were received by... And I forget exactly who it was that was listening. I believe it was an observatory, if I'm not mistaken. But they were deliberately listening. At the time, it was believed that there were civilizations living on Mars, going back to Percival Lowell.
Yeah, the old canals.
The thing. Canals and, right. and what have you. And lo and behold, they used an experimental radio camera that was used to send information around the country, which printed out on film humanoid faces that were received from these mysterious radio signals. Then it came out that both Marconi and Tesla had both admitted that they received radio signals that they had no idea where the signals emanated from, but they believed that it came perhaps from somebody on the moon or on Mars.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Tesla in particular, as a matter of fact, anybody involved with the Tesla Society, of course, I'm preaching to the choir, but Tesla had patents dating back into the late 1800s that were immediately at that time. I mean, you have a government that didn't have an OSS yet to even begin turning into a CIA.
Well, gentlemen didn't spy another gentleman.
Exactly.
To read their mail.
Well,
in those days.
Supposedly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Lincoln, of course, had his own corps.
Thank you, incidentally, for that.
But all of his patents seem to be swept up and disappeared.
Yeah.
And
when he died.
Exactly.
Passed away.
And
well, Secret Service agents went in and raided his house.
Yeah. And there's an incident also printed in the New York Times, excuse me, when police were called to his residence at that time because of a miniature earthquake that was occurring, and not only the building,
right.
but it grew out to be three blocks. And the testimony of the officers that arrived on the scene, now you're talking back in the early part of the century, he's axing a piece of some small device that had fused to a metal girder in the building he was living in to get it to stop, and that's when it stopped.
And that was in New York, wasn't it?
That was in New York.
It was a small device.
A little tiny device that he claimed later in his own writings that are available to the public. He attached was nothing but a small, very low frequency vibration.
ELF.
Something that the C-SETI group claims they can communicate with aliens with. And to our point earlier with John Lear about everything being, you know, these humanoid, alien-eating things, people-eating things with the blood vats and everything else, Now we have another group, and thanks to your show, Don, Sea Studies has to deal with the public at large now. We mentioned it on our show, too. This is a group that's deifying whatever it is in those UFOs that none of them have met, that none of them know anything about, and much to my dismay, having worked long ago in an emergency room environment and involved in that kind of atmosphere, we have emergency room physicians that are making these judgments. And I got to know some emergency room physicians over the years, and I was shocked at the conclusions they arrive. You know, if I had to be diagnosed with some kind of disease, I think these are some of the physicians that, if they were the last ones on Earth, I'd just soon go undiagnosed.
We're gonna have to take a quick break. Once again, we're a minute or two past our break. We're gonna be right back. In the meantime, get ready to jot down these numbers if you haven't gotten them yet. Because when I open up the phone lines, you're gonna want to be able to call in. So stand by. We'll be back in just a sec. Like you. Okay, we're back. We're back. Once again, we're back.
Just to continue where we were, Don, the thing about the extremes, again, it's with that empty the cup thing. We have extremes that are involved in this field, extremes like I don't think any other field that I can think of offhand has. John Mack himself, the Harvard psychologist, psychiatrist, that came out in defense of abductees, at least in the defense of the phenomena being real, is now being trashed and asked to leave Harvard.
Well, they backed off. Now. Right. They backed away from that.
He has tenure. I mean, you know, there's a legal issue there that he knew.
It boils down to academic fascism. It's a problem that has absolutely dogged this field with anybody with credentials that have attempted to look into it. And you know, there have been people with credentials also that have been fringy, and there have been people with no credentials that claimed that they've had credentials that mm-hmm. have certainly done the field no good. But you know, back about a year ago, I believe it was October 1, Larry King did a two-hour foray into the desert on the UFO subject. And during that, and as a matter of fact, Bill, you were down there.
I was there, Charlie. Yeah.
You were down there.
I spent my whole time doing the actual show in the bar at the Little Alley Inn because they had the TV on there, and I was more interested in seeing who was there and picking up bits and, you know, pieces of conversation, and it was highly revealing, I must say.
Well, I'm sure it was. That place has always attracted a strange element, but King had several people there live. He had Dr. Stephen Greer of Sea City. He had Kevin Randall, who's probably one of the best known of the Roswell UFO researchers, along with Stanton Friedman. Incidentally, Stanton is no PhD. You knew
mm-hmm.
that, right?
Yes.
And then a fellow by the name of Glenn Campbell.
Glenn Campbell.
Who has been basically not even known in the UFO field until a couple of years ago when he began associating himself with excursions out to what at that time was still public land around Area 51. But you know, I was on that program in a taped segment.
Right.
And I found it highly strange and also perhaps very significant. I had a piece of film, a videotape, that I had made available to them that, in my opinion, still is one of the most amazing pieces.
Oh, is that the New Mexico?
No.
The Vandenberg piece.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Vandenberg piece, where an Atlas rocket was launching. An anomalous object came down from the sky, circled this climbing missile twice, flew off to the left, came back, circled it again, and then split. Now, I offered that to King because, you know, this, you can't get much more amazing than that, okay? And they only played a few seconds of that with virtually no comment.
Yeah.
And that literally blew me away. But this has been the problem with the media also, as well as the questionable elements in this field.
Right.
Now, what in the world could that have been? Well, it's truly, it is the epitome of an unidentified object.
Well, as we discussed on our show, the last show that we had, and you know, just so people know, our show, Bill and David's show, The Blue File, is not a show that you're going to hear on any regular basis. At this moment, we don't even know if you're ever going to hear it again, because it is privately put together by basically just Joe Public in the street that feels that there is a message that gets out here. Don and Vicky and their effort at UFO Magazine, boy, if, you know, all the people that have claimed they're CIA over the years, if they're CIA, boy, I want to be on the other person's payroll.
Yeah, people pay you guys very well.
I know what that's like, and, you know, if that's the case, then we've all got a problem.
Vicky gets angry at that. I don't. I smile when somebody...
Oh, it has to roll. It has to just roll off your back.
I smile
hysterical.
When somebody asked me that. They said, well, you know, if in fact I am, I wish, number one, that they would please let me know what I'm supposed to be doing, number two, compensate me
yes,
for it.
Yes, please. I mean, I want to be paid for this at least. As I'm holding this up, Don, I think you were already supplied a copy of this.
Area 51. Glenn sent it to me. Glenn Campbell himself sent it to me.
In this particular copy, in his handwriting, which is a Xerox, you can see who he's asking for help in how to
John,
do this guy.
John, I presume
now,
that's John Lear?
This was John Lear, whom he looked to as... I don't know exactly, I won't say prophet, but he definitely looked to as a sensei, and at the very least, an instructor in how he would proceed with this writing. And since we're talking about Campbell, let me just say this about that, as Richard Nixon used to say. Glenn Campbell came onto the scene long after the lights were out, to use a term, at 51.
Right.
Glenn Campbell was not there from the beginning. He came on very late. He made... he's almost Sean Morton's parallel to the opposite extreme. On Montel Williams' special, which was another bomb, when Montel made the promise, I will get to the bottom of this, I have been lied to by the U.S. government, there is a base out there, we're treated to nothing but 50 minutes of an abductee that claims she was abducted in the middle of a karate class. Another abductee with a huge pyramid hanging over her bed, disputing the fact that another abductee, who's not an abductee but an ET walk-in, writing a UFO magazine. They're all in a cat fight.
And what made me want to literally get sick when I watched that? I saw that show.
Mm-hmm.
Was that they probably had one of the most respectable people in the world that they could have possibly had on there to speak intelligently, knowledgeably, and honestly about this garbage, and they totally, for the most part, ignored him. And I'm talking about George Knapp.
That's right.
George Knapp was probably, they could have done no better than to bring Knapp on that show, but what the hell they should have done was allowed him to talk. Instead, they brought these morons on, and they were
absolutely
morons.
Absolutely. George, for the, you know, I'm glad you said that, Don, because speaking of Zen earlier, that entire hour was a very great disappointment.
You know, George knows Williams very well.
Yes.
You know that.
Yes. George made a statement, and I'm going to quote here because we actually are using it in a work that we're expanding upon at this time. His statement spoke volumes, and it really didn't matter what happened during that show when he made the statement. And this is quoting George Knapp. There's something wrong with the entire method of this that modern science uses to explain this phenomena away. It seems to me that true science involves investigation of the unexplained, not an explanation of the uninvestigated. And there was a very mild round of applause from the audience. Well, you know, to some of us watching at home, there was a rabble-rousing round of applause, standing ovation for that statement. And unfortunately, that was just about the only thing that George Knapp got to utter out of his mouth. And this is a man that had been on scene, had been involved, was involved from the beginning. Billy Goodman at the time, if people...
Billy Buffoon?
Yeah. Billy, to the listeners that were out there, might remember that the government of Japan, via Nippon Television, which is the official government station based out of the Royal Palace of Japan, there were Japanese nationals traveling to a U.S. secret military site.
Well, they came out and interviewed me at that time.
Large groups of them.
Yeah.
Asahi.
A fellow by the name of Charles Lee, I think.
Chuck Lee, right, exactly.
Lee, right. Yeah.
A very Americanized Japanese citizen. and somebody that, I mean, you had a situation where we literally have on tape, and you have to imagine the government on this side of things, when you're talking about that area, and you have a foreign country going to the site, with an American citizen leading the charge.
That'd be Noriega,
Mr. Hayakawa, Mr. Schultz. There's a definite viewpoint that the two of them, if anybody spends any time with, that they come from, and it's a very
well. A number of weeks ago, not to interrupt, but speaking about Norio Hayakawa, a number of weeks ago, he was on Bell's Dreamland program on Sunday evening, and. Norio, having known Norio for a number of years, I've always thought that he looked at this somewhat softly, the UFO field. But he came across very articulately that night, and to say the least, I was pleasantly surprised, until basically close to the end of the program when he let his true bias slip out. And that bias involved the fact that this phenomenon was probably demonic or satanic in scope. And, I mean, come on, give God a little credit.
Exactly.
You know? This is a big universe, guys, gals. This, we're talking about our own galaxy is 100,000 light years in length, 7,000 or 8,000 light years in depth, with a lot of stars out there, which could have a lot of different types of life evolve.
Did you by chance, Don, see the Nightline Thursday night, the 19th?
No.
So far, quite amazingly, we haven't heard about it on the evening news. It was confined to just this Nightline, and Ted Koppel started it off himself saying, "I'm in utter amazement tonight because I don't exactly know how to go about the next 30 minutes of this show." We have a finding that has put everybody on their rear end, and I don't know how to put it in layman's term. It's shocking even to myself. And at this point, he brings out just about every other than Flip Flop Sagan. He brings out just about everybody you can imagine in the top field of physics and astrophysics, including Stephen Hawking. And interestingly enough, they're now admitting they have absolute proof that there are planets outside of the solar system, in particular, one and two planets they've spotted rotating around a star known as, no pun intended with the number here, 51 Pegasus.
Pegasus, yes. That I was aware of. But let me state something that you may or may not be aware of. Back in 1956, Donald Kehoe, I believe it's now, I'm ashamed that I can't specifically tell you, I think it's the Flying Saucer Conspiracy. His third book that he wrote, he talked about the military being aware, there was no doubt about it, aware of about 22 planets. Mm-hmm. He was talking about it, and this book was published in 56, it was written in 54 or 55,
right.
But he was stating specific numbers of actual planets that they were aware of. And this 51 Pegasus is not the first star that over the last few years has been has been mentioned as having other planetary bodies.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, this is the first conclusive proof that people like Hawking are ready to stand behind because they can't any longer deny.
We're going to have to stop. We're at the top of the hour. Boy, I'll tell you, this is one of those shows I can tell should go on for another 2 hours after we get done at 11. But
and probably will.
And probably will.
In the parking lot.
My name's Don Ecker, the show UFOs Tonight. You're listening to the Cable Radio Network. Tonight, in studio with me, Bill Bridges, Dave Torelli, and we are talking about UFOs and conspiracies. Coming up next, Vicki Cooper with a very special Halloween landing pad. And when we come back, more with my special two in-studio guests and a whole lot more, including your phone calls. Stand by. There's a lot more coming up. You don't want to miss it.